Now, as we mentioned and we spoke about on the programme yesterday, the issues of GP cover, GP services are key ones, particularly for rural counties and rural areas where we're struggling to maintain the GPs we have and replace ones that retire. We read in the Irish Independent this morning, waiting lists to see a GP are set to worsen as the rollout of the free GP visit cards to around 500,000 people is planned, doctors warned. Most GPs have now closed their list to new patients, the Irish Medical Organisation has said. It was responding to the announcement of a strategic review of general practice announced yesterday by the Department of Health to assess its various needs. Dennis McCauley, chairman of the GP committee of the IMO, said while the review is welcome, it's deeply frustrating that the review will take place after the proposed rollout of free GP care to an additional 500,000 people was announced. Such a policy, if implemented in an unplanned way, will dramatically increase the frequency of visits to GPs, leading to delays, the creation of waiting lists for GP visits, and the displacement of care for those patients who are most unwell. He said, clearly the news in the review reflects an acknowledgement that we have significant problems around general practice, including capacity, access to out-of-hour services, such as what we talked about yesterday in the programme in South Dock, the suitability of existing financial model underpinning the GP services. And he's warning that already demand for appointments exceeds capacity. Well, what's your experience of going to your GP and how has it changed over the last while? With me on the line to talk about this from his perspective is Dingle GP and Green Party representative Padraig O'Fionnán. Padraig, good morning to you and thanks for joining me in the programme.
Good morning, Gerry. Thank you.
First of all, do you welcome the announced review of services, where we're at, what the problems are, capacity issues and other things by the department?
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly we need a strategic, fundamental review of how GP is working for the Irish population. You know, piecemeal changes and policy changes aren't going to work anymore. And as you referred to there, like, things are spiralling a bit out of control from what has been, you know, a pretty good and still is quite a good part of our health system. But we're seeing signs of it falling apart and under serious strain. I think if you're looking at a strategic access point of view, you're going to look at where do we want to be? What is the destination here? And that question of access, obviously, you know, fair, universal access. At the moment, half of you have to pay to see a GP, half of you aren't paying. So it's not a very fair system, and that is a barrier for many people, like, seeking healthcare at the most basic level. So we're going to have to look at the question of access and, as you mentioned, just the general supply. So
why is it not fair, Padraig?
Well, I mean, it's crude. You know, you either pay or don't pay to see a GP. So there's many people in the middle. You know, you're going to have to find a system like most countries have where you either it's free for everybody at the point of contact or some small co-payment that isn't the full whack, because healthcare is expensive. And, you know, at the moment, there's probably a few percent of people for whom it's no bother to pay. But for a large chunk of people who don't have a medical card, it is quite a significant barrier. So if that's your most basic level of healthcare, there shouldn't be a barrier there. We have very fair, you know, it's very fair once you get in there. People are treated the same in primary care. But the payment issue is clumsy, it's crude, and it's not working anymore.
Does that go then to an issue of universally free healthcare and how do we pay for it? Or is it that underpinning of the business model that exists now for a GP who wants to set up a practice in rural Ireland, that they have to pay the bills, they have to pay for nurses, they have to pay for bills, heating, medical equipment and other issues like that? The viability, let's say, of a GP practice in rural Ireland.
There's a whole area around viability, and you know, there's two big areas. There's rural area out the peninsulas in the west of Ireland, and there's areas of deprivation in inner city, etc. I'm involved in training GPs, and we're obviously increasing trainings as fast as we can. It's not going to be fast enough. But the fear that I see in the young trainees coming out is they don't want to be risk takers. They didn't go into this to be business people. They don't want to be employers necessarily for the most part. They want to be doctors. And so it's attractive to some GPs to be all those things, to be entrepreneurs. But for many of the young GPs, they don't want to take on all those hassles and all those uncertainties. And in many areas, it's not that viable. You know, you go to certain areas of the country, there's not a great business in it. And, you know, to be honest, you know, you could do better going to become a consultant anyway. It's not the prime motivator, but it's just the amount of responsibility and stress that's been put on GPs if they are to set up small practices in small areas. is quite large, and it's not that sort of person that's typically wanting to be a GP. They're not normally an entrepreneur as well.
So what is the answer to that then? Is it government hired, HSE hired GPs operating, run by the state, yeah, in rural areas?
I mean, not entirely. There's going to have to be a suite. You're going to have to look at the subtleties of this. I mean, the likes of myself now in Dingle, you know, we'll struggle to get holidays every year. You know, so I think having some cadre of employed GPs that are available either for those areas that nobody will go to, and that you can say, right, there's an employee for this place, or for those places, which is most of the West Coast, where you can't get your holidays anymore, that there is something that you'll get 3 weeks holidays, and your GP will come in, and your employed GP will come in. There's probably a role for some level of employee GPs. It'll be attractive to some doctors to be that GP, not to everyone, but it'll help plug gaps. You know, so that's one element of it. It's not going that there's no panacea in this. There's going to be a whole level of things, but you have to look at the principles we need. We need good access. We need more healthcare in the community. So that's going to add to demand. We, you know, good health systems have healthcare delivered by someone you know, by someone you continually know, and it's done in the community. So like things like access to scans, access to other health professionals, that obviously needs to happen, but it will put more pressure again. So we're going to need more support. The GPs will need kind of more practice nurses, people like physicians assistants, that sort of thing. But also it needs to be, like you're alluding to there, attractive to retain our GPs. We're losing quite a lot of them. They're heading off to Canada and Australia, having been trained, as we all know. So we need to make it kind of attractive for them and support the younger GPs coming out.
Does that mean a premium payment, or perhaps maybe better terms for those who decide to set up in an area which is without a GP?
I'm not looking necessarily for more money for GPs, but inevitably you're going to have to look to make the thing work, to retain people. It's not always about money. You know, sometimes it's about lifestyle, being able to take your holidays, and
being not under as much pressure or stress.
Yeah, I don't think GPs will necessarily go into this in a real union frame of mind. You know, some of the problem solving might not, you know, everything costs money, but it's not only about just pay us more and we'll sort out everything for you. Some of the reforms will be structural, you know, in the relationship of how. Like currently, my contract with the government is 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, I will provide healthcare for the people on my list. So it's kind of untenable.
Yeah.
That sort of a contract, and it puts quite a significant pressure on you know, and it's a pressure that not everyone's gonna take on. So the landscape has changed. But I think just the third principle that really needs to be looked at in this review is we need a revolutionary change in how healthcare is aiming. From firefighting, from fixing problems, towards preventative. You know, we really have to put big resources into things like social prescribing, lifestyle medicine, looking at the roots of, you know, that the energy and the resources need to be going, kind of have fallen and are falling into this kind of medico-industrial complex where things inevitably require tablets and scans. And that's just not good healthcare. That doesn't give good results, and it does cost more money. So
more effort needs to be put into the area of preventing people from needing to call their GP in the first place, to get involved before.
And when they do call their GP, that their GP has a whole range of options of this concept that's coming in of social prescribing, where you'll walk out with something, but it won't necessarily be a tablet. It might be some mentor who's going to get you involved in some clubs or fitness, who's going to get you connected to your community better, help you get connected to your community, help you get connected to nature. This stuff sounds nutty, perhaps, but like everybody listening knows that nature, community, purpose, meaning, these are the foundations of how people keep themselves well. We're actually able to keep ourselves well, but we have lost a lot of those.
Have we fallen into a trap so of something's wrong with me, call the doctor, I'll get a tablet or a scan and then a tablet afterwards, and that's the end of the conversation? I want something to fix me, that's it.
We all have, you know, and I mean, you can't be naive about it. So there is a whole money making industry behind tablet making and tablet.
Yeah,
active, and it's
that's
easy.
Been pushing us in that direction in recent years. That there's a tablet for everything, and there may not be a tablet for everything, or shouldn't be. Perhaps
there's nobody making money out of selling walking. really. Yeah. Not many people making money out of that, and they're not putting out the research to show how good walking is, you know. But we, you know, the stuff that, helps us, you know, connectedness to people, these sort of things is where we get wellness. But we really have to remind ourselves that this is the purpose of wellness, and that healthcare can do that, and GPs are the level where that can happen, where we can
on the ground, in the communities, you can be the point of contact for people. Let me ask you this, Pater, finally, and the question, and we'll get this from listeners, we do all the time, maybe it's because of what happened in COVID and that separation that was placed within the GP and their people, or maybe it's because our population has increased and that's why this review is being carried out. But there, and look, this might be a perception thing primarily, but there's a view out there that things have fundamentally changed. You used to be able to ring up the doctor, get an appointment within half an hour or an hour or 2 hours, go in, see them face to face, get your tablet or get your advice, be it, and that was the situation. Now, you're on the phone, you're waiting, it may be a telecall. It's a different proposition and people don't like it. What's your response to those concerns?
Absolutely. I mean, GP has become a much more busier, much more stressful. The secretaries are bearing massive pressures in every practice around the country, phones hopping. The business has exploded. We have taken on more work. You're alluding to more of the doctor visit cards or the free access for under eights. That's one element. We're doing more programs like these preventative programs. But the other thing that's happening, and the big issue in the demographics, is you've got the old workhorses of GPs are retiring. The younger GPs are tending to work 3 to 4 day weeks. We're also tending to, you know, there's a lot more thoroughness. You know, GPs in my father's generation, there was more just getting through it and going with your gut, but they're under a lot more obligations to follow guidelines and do things kind of right. So everything takes more time now. So there's a number of reasons why, but yes, things have got a lot more busier, and people are finding that on the phones. They'll get through to their GP for the most part. But obviously there's communities where people are not getting through GPs and not even finding a GP.
And this problem then of not even getting a GP, you're not even getting on a list, as things stand.
Yeah, no, the manpower crisis is massive, and we need to make it attractive. We need to retain our GPs. In Tralee here, we're training up. We've all kind of doubled the amount of GPs we're training up now in the last, I'd say, 6 years. So there is more coming through, but that takes a few years. And even at that rate, it's not going to be enough. We're going to need more, you know, practice nurses, physicians assistants, other professionals to help spread the work.
Yeah.
Because we are in a state of crisis.
As we get older as a population, it'll be more demand for those services, so we'll need more staff to meet them 10, 15 years down the line.
We're having a rapidly aging population, and of course we're treating that age with a lot more tablets. People are getting more chronic conditions. We are gaining weight. We are probably exercising less as a population. So there's a lot going on that is leading to it. And some of it is simple. Some of it you just need to reverse by getting into more preventative medicine, and you don't need doctors to be front and centre to that, but we can play a role in this whole idea of social prescribing and lifestyle medicine and all these different things that we need to rediscover.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Pater, listen, thanks very much for talking to us and going through those issues. We'll see what the review comes up with and if it tackles those issues, but thanks for talking to us in the programme this morning.
Thank you, Terry.